Well, it's Mental Health Radio, take it from us, and talking about a good rock. Well, that's a good rock song from Joe Cocker called Respect Yourself, but I got a good rock on Waiheke this morning. The thunder clapped, shaking the house, rattling the windows, and I noticed when I got on the ferry this morning that they had a special warning out about thunderstorms. There were waterspouts on Auckland Harbour, photographed as well. So it's been quite a start to April 23. I hope you all had a good Easter, relaxing, seeing some people, connecting with friends and family. So this is Mental Health Radio, take it from us, and I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran. And we are funded and brought to you by Framework Trust. Of course, later this year, probably in about 3 to 4 months, that name of Framework Trust will change to Ember Trust. Now, today we review the 13th annual report of the Office of the Director of Mental Health and Addictions, that is Dr. John Crawshaw. It's a report which, take it from us, has analysed each year for the past 4 to 5 years. And over the years, I've become increasingly disillusioned with the same old nature of this report, and also the repetition of so many of the sections where it just seems to be a cut and paste job, adding perhaps some additional figures. And this is particularly true when Dr. Crawshaw addresses Maori mental health, which is in a very parlous state. And it seems an insult to Maori mental health that pretty much the same material, some of it dating back to 2006, is trumpeted out in this annual report. Yes, the report is for 2017, the year 2017. It's the only annual report that I know of which covers a period of time which is almost 2 years old. This is a summary of the mental health system and the addiction system, which is 2 years old by the time it is released. And in fact, the suicide statistics are almost 4 years old in this report. They date back to 2015. And the report continues to talk about around 500 people who commit suicide in New Zealand. Well, we all know that that has risen dramatically and worryingly to at least 650 in the provisional statistics. And I think that that is just hoodwinking New Zealanders and anybody who reads this report into believing that our suicide rate is still only around 500. The age of this report raises serious issues about the value of it at all, except to reinforce the parlous state of mental health in New Zealand. And this has been picked up by the CEO of the Mental Health Foundation in a media release which pulls few punches about Crawshaw's report. The Foundation CEO, Sean Robinson, says this annual report reveals a system that is not improving and reinforces the urgent need for leadership and an action plan for major change to improve New Zealand's response to mental health and well-being. And I quote Sean Robinson. He says, "The report describes an ever-increasing demand for services which has not been matched by funding or a strategic response. We need more focus on keeping people well and building their positive mental health. When services are required, the report shows a sector under increasing pressure and a stretched system that is struggling to make progress on the quality, consistency and improved care and support needed by all New Zealanders." So that's quoting Sean Robinson, the CEO of the Mental Health Foundation. Mental Health Director Crawshaw, and it's his report that we're reviewing today, says his report presents information and stats that serve as indicators of the quality of our specialist health services. Yes, you heard that word, quality. It is vital, he says, to actively monitor these services to ensure that New Zealanders receive quality care in a timely fashion. Well, take it from us, as interviewed so many people over the years whose experience of the mental health system has failed them on both counts, i.e. on the quality care coming in a timely fashion, and neither they haven't enjoyed either of those values. Their care hasn't reached anywhere close to quality, nor has it been delivered in a timely fashion. Crawshaw's report claims that just under half of people new to mental health services, that's new to mental health services, were seen within 48 hours. But for existing services, as particularly DHB services, Crawshaw admits that it takes from 3 to 8 weeks for these existing mental health service clients to access services. And I ask the question, is that good enough? 3 to 8 weeks if you're in a crisis. What do you do for that 3 to 8 weeks? We had a guest on about 3 weeks ago, and she was told, after coming back from a suicide attempt in Sydney and returning to New Zealand, that she would have to wait 6 months to see a psychologist. Unfortunately, she had parents who could afford a private psychologist, and then they discovered, which was very good news, that accident compensation would cover the cost of the psychologist, because a lot of her mental health was related to sexual abuse. So I don't think it is good enough for existing clients of DHB services to have to wait 3 to 8 weeks to get to see somebody and to get support and help. The mental health system, according to Crawshaw, is dealing with a record number of people, he says this almost every year in his report, who are accessing specialist mental health and addiction services. The total throughout New Zealand was more than 176,000. And Crawshaw seems to celebrate that numbers are increasing. Now, that 176,000 that sought or accessed specialist mental health and addiction services, that's about 3.6% of the New Zealand population. And those who are specifically asking for help and support from mental health, mostly in the community, they total about 125,000. So going back to the CEO of the Mental Health Foundation, Sean Robinson, he hopes immediate action is taken to address such pressing needs. He says such figures presented in the report again show serious problems in people accessing and getting quality help. Robinson also highlights a figure that Crawshaw trumpets each year, that 83%, there is an 83% consumer satisfaction rate with mental health and addiction services. But Robinson said that, even that figure of 83% is unacceptable, and a number like that would not be good enough in the commercial sector or in other industries. As I say, Crawshaw's report makes a very big deal out of this 83% customer satisfaction, saying those surveyed agreed or strongly agreed that they would recommend the service to friends and family if they needed similar care or treatment. And as I've highlighted in previous reviews of Crawshaw's report, what he doesn't, or what the report doesn't reinforce, is that the survey only involves a little over 5,000 clients. So that's 5,000 of the total 176,000 people accessing services in 2017. Well, that's only about 2.8% who have filled out this customer satisfaction survey. I wonder why more clients didn't bother. Were they so dissatisfied with those services that their silence is a protest? To quote Sean Robinson of the Mental Health Foundation again, he says tens of thousands of Kiwis are not receiving the support they need, and he adds that the stats don't take into account the number of people who are not, and I repeat, who are not accessing services at all. He also highlights the over-representation of Maori, particularly in being secluded and under compulsory treatment, and we'll look into that a little later in our broadcast. He says that the over-representation of Maori in seclusion and under compulsory treatment orders continues to be unacceptable. Well, Declan, let's take a music break. Give me a bit of a break as well, and then we're going to bring Declan in to play host and ask some further questions.
Sounds good to me. I've just pulled a track here that, interestingly enough, I got this on The Edge on TV. Oh. Came up. Never heard of it before, from 2018.
On TV?
Yeah, on the Edge, on the music channel.
Oh,
on
okay.
TV.
Right.
Yeah. And it chronicles a young girl who's struggling to make her way through life. The first verse covers absent parents not caring. The second verse, she takes on an unwanted job as an escort or a stripper to make ends meet. And in the chorus, the singer tells the girl he understands and loves her and wants to help pull her through out of the wreckage. The version I've got for you is a remix. The song is called Saturday Nights, and it's by, I think it's Khalid, K-H-A-L-I-D, with Kane Brown. And you're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting on 104.6 Planet FM every Tuesday, right here from 12:30 to 1:30.
Saturday nights, blueberry cigarillos, swishes make my throat hurt. Rolling up CBs on the side for me, light them up and let them both burn. Family feud, saying mom's confused, I for sure she doesn't wanna learn. But daddy's gone, say he's never home, and wishing only makes it worse. I guess there's certain dreams that you gotta keep, cause they'll only know what you let them say. All the things that I know that your parents don't, they don't care like I do, nowhere like I do. All the things that I know that your parents don't, they don't care like I do, nowhere like I do, nowhere like I do, nowhere like I do. Saturday night, your work shoes are stiletto, smell a cheap perfume, makeup on your face, try to hide the pain. All the lies that look like the truth. Deep in your heart, all you want is love, but you never felt good enough. You got wrapped up in other plans, but this ain't the way the story ends. Guess there's certain dreams that you gotta keep, cause they'll only know what you let them say. All the things that I know that your parents don't, they don't care like I do, nowhere like I do. And all the things that I know that your parents don't, they don't care like I do, nowhere like I do, nowhere like I do. Cause I care, I care, I care about you. There's nowhere I'd rather be than right here without you. I care, I care, care about you. There's nowhere I'd rather be
parents don't. They don't care about you. No way did I do all the things that I know that your parents don't care about you.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran. It's the Sheldon and Declan show today. We don't have any guests in. And Declan mentioned that song was by Caylid and that she takes on an unwanted job at some point in her life as an escort or a stripper to make ends meet. And we interviewed somebody just about 2 or 3 weeks ago who had to pursue similar interests to make life.
That's not the singer, though. The singer is, he's a nice brown boy singing about a girl. She's in the lyrics. She's not singing.
Oh, she's in the lyrics. I'm sorry. Okay, I beg your pardon. I've misunderstood.
That's all right.
So
I was just letting you.
It's a song about somebody taking on an unwanted job as an escort and a stripper. So.
And I just thought I'd let you stumble on through it a little bit longer and then rescue you.
Yeah, okay, well, I love being rescued. But anyway, we did interview a girl from South Auckland who had a similar background, had to resort to the adult industry. And you can hear her interview either on planetaudio.org.nz /take it from us. It'll still be on Planet FM's website, or you could also access it on takeitfromus.co.nz, where we have uploaded an edited version. So I'm going to bring Declan in. We are just reviewing the annual report of the Office of the Director of Mental Health and Addictions, Dr. John Crawshaw. He's had something of a promotion because he now covers off both mental health and addictions, which is made clear in this latest annual report, the 13th that he has produced. I don't know how many we have reviewed on Take It From Us, probably five or six. And as I said in the introduction, I'm singularly unimpressed with the quality of this report. I don't think it really goes anywhere in addressing the major challenges in terms of quality, support, the time that so many clients have to wait to get in front of a specialist to get help. And it also doesn't address the overrepresentation of Maori in mental health, and we're going to talk about that. So I'll hand it over to Declan as the host.
Cheers, you're confident. Okay. Well, I particularly with the bit you've just mentioned about Maori, Sean Robinson says that New Zealand's approach to mental health and wellbeing must address the disproportionate burden of distress and suicide experienced by tangata whenau. He says the services weren't clearly working for many Maori, and the innovative, culturally specific responses are required. What does the report say about Maori mental health in general?
Well, there is a summary here for this year 2017, which I have been underlining is almost 2 years old. So any of these stats are pretty much out of date, but they do apply to 2017. So Maori were almost four times more likely than non-Maori to be subject to a community treatment order, and about 3.5 times more likely to be subject to an inpatient treatment order, which means that they would have to go into the care of an acute psychiatric unit. Maori males were the population group in New Zealand most likely to be subject to community and inpatient treatment orders. And the ratio of Maori to non-Maori subject to community and inpatient treatment orders, well, that varied by DHB. But the high rate of Maori subject to compulsory treatment orders, Crawshaw says, is a very complex issue. Maori make up approximately 16% of New Zealand's population, yet they account for a whopping 28% of all mental health service users. And Crawshaw continues to quote a national mental health prevalence study, which was called Te Rau Hiningaro. It was done by Oakley Brown and others way back in 2006. So it may still have credibility, but it is 13 years old. And this study showed that Maori experienced the highest levels of mental health disorder overall. They are also more likely to experience serious disorders and comorbidities than non-Maori. So Maori access rates to services exceeded those of other groups. So 6.4% of Maori accessed mental health services in 2017 compared to 3.1%. So the rate of Maori accessing services is almost double. It says that there are demographic features relevant to the high rate of Maori service users, and they include the youthfulness of the Maori population and the disproportionate representation of Maori in low socioeconomic groups. So in 2017, about half of the total Maori service user population were under 25 years of age. Analysis has shown that those sorts of demographic factors do not completely account for the high rate of Maori with serious mental illness. So it does seem there's great potential to study why there is such a high incidence of serious mental illness among the Maori population and why they are overrepresented in compulsory treatment. So that's just about all. I could just say here to Declan that in 2017, Maori males were the population group most likely to be subject to community and inpatient treatment orders. Maori males were four times more likely to be subject to a community treatment order than non-Maori males. So, you know, this is something of an area of great concern. I think Sean Robinson said in the press release that we continue to quote, he says New Zealand's approach to mental health and well-being must address the disproportionate burden of distress and suicide experienced by tangata whenua. Services are clearly not working for many Maori, and innovative, culturally specific responses are required. Yeah, so, and I would add that this is an example where this report parrots the same sentiments of the past 3 to 4 years in Crawshaw's annual report, where Maori mental health is seen as a priority by the Ministry of Health, but little is offered to address it. Crawshaw repeats his statement of many years that the mental health system needs to engage in meaningful actions to address the disparity of mental health outcomes for Maori in New Zealand. But unfortunately, in this latest report, the 13th report from the Director of Mental Health and Addictions, there is no clue as to how they're going to address this disparity of mental health outcomes for Maori in New Zealand.
What is actually involved in that disparity?
Yeah, we've probably covered that off in that my last response about the high rates of Maori subject to compulsory treatment orders, the fact that Maori males are four times more likely to be under a compulsory treatment order than any other group in the population. And, you know, there is, and that, yeah, let's see here, that almost 3.5 times, Maori are more than 3.5 times more likely to be subject to an inpatient treatment order, which would, as I understand it, mean that they would spend time in an acute psychiatric unit.
Okay. The consultation with whānau about the mental health treatment is regarded as important for Maori. What does the report actually go in and say about that?
Well, it says, Declan, that on average nationally, only 60% of families or whānau were consulted about Mental Health Act assessments and treatment events. Now, the Maori hold up consultation with whānau as being incredibly important. So at the moment, or in 2017, 2 years ago, only six out of 10 families or whānau were being consulted about an assessment of their either family or loved ones for a Mental Health Act assessment or treatment event. It says that family and whānau consultation varied by DHBs, and there's 21 DHBs. The most common reason family and whānau were not consulted was that service providers deemed consultation not reasonably practicable in the particular circumstance. Now, I don't know that that tells us a great deal. Could it be that the person who is heading for support or being put under the Mental Health Act is so unwell that their family can't be consulted? It says here the purpose of family whānau consultation is to strengthen the involvement of family and whānau in the compulsory assessment and treatment process, to enhance the family and whānau contribution to the person's care. So if you're only achieving 6 out of 10, where you're 6 out of 10 families being consulted, and you're trying to enhance the contribution of family to personal care, well, it doesn't look as though you're doing too good a job. Also to address family whānau concerns about information sharing and treatment options, and to facilitate ongoing family whānau involvement in Mental Health Act processes, such as clinical reviews of treatment or any court hearings. So I'd have to say that we're not doing particularly well in terms of consultation, bringing Maori families and whānau into the process of their loved ones being put under the Mental Health Act, or at least being assessed for treatment.
Yeah, it sounds like that maybe the services need to tailor more for the different ethnicities and what they need. But it does get me sort of wondering why there is such a high prevalence of Maori population in the prison system and in the mental health system, and how many of those that have gone into the prison system should be in the mental health system.
I think they say that almost, if not more than 90% of people in prison have a mental health challenge.
And that's not helping them get back on their feet, because when they come out, they're then trying to integrate back into society. So it's, yeah. I don't know why they don't pull the plug and restart again. It's like putting a band-aid on a lilo, isn't it, to a degree?
Well, that could be a very good description for the current government inquiry into mental health and addictions, and I'm just hoping that it's not going to be a band-aid on a lilo, that we're actually going to see some real progress and forward thinking and change for the mental health system. And this report really does reinforce how important that change is.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. What about another controversial issue of seclusion, and exactly what is seclusion as such?
Yeah, well, there is a definition from Standards New Zealand, which defines seclusion as a situation, and I quote, where a consumer is placed alone in a room or area at any time and for any duration from which they cannot freely exit. Now, There is a very, very strong movement that seclusion should be banned in New Zealand. So I'll read that definition again, because it is really about incarceration within the mental health system. And the definition is where a consumer is placed alone. So get that. They have no staff support. They have no whānau support. They're placed alone in a room or area at any time and for any duration. And we'll talk a little bit more about the duration. And from which they cannot freely exit. And my understanding is that some seclusion rooms perhaps don't even have toilets. So
I was actually thinking seclusion. The first thing I was thinking of was solitary confinement, because really it's the same thing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Really? And I think the word seclusion is just a
fluffy cotton wool.
Way of trying to disguise the fact that this really is solitary confinement. I mean, in March 2018, the Health Quality and Safety Commission, in partnership with TAPO, launched a national collaborative project called Zero Seclusion, towards the elimination of seclusion by 2020. This is going to be done in collaboration with DHBs, service providers, and Tangata Whaiora, but we are talking now about 12 months out. And given that there is almost 1,000 examples of seclusion in our overall psychiatric or mental health and addiction services, it's a big leap of faith that there will be zero seclusion by 2020. I mean, it would be great to see it. It says the Zero Seclusion Project takes a recovery approach that encompasses a strong focus on the role of consumers, families, and whānau. The project uses quality improvement methods to test and implement evidence-based strategies to reduce and eliminate the use of seclusion. And of course, seclusion is justified where people are deemed to be of harm to themselves or harm to others. There's a bit of a mixed picture in terms of what is the trend of seclusion. It says the total number of people who experience seclusion while receiving mental health treatment in an adult inpatient service has decreased by 28% since 2009. So in the 8 years from 2009 to 2017, it has decreased by 28%. But the thing that isn't really highlighted is that in the year 2017, the number of hours spent in seclusion actually increased by 8%. Males were twice as likely as females to have spent time in seclusion, and people aged 20 to 24 years were more likely to have spent time in seclusion than those in any other group. And it says here, Maori, as we were talking about Maori mental health earlier, were more likely than non-Maori to have been secluded, have greater numbers per 100,000 population of seclusion events, and also they have a greater average duration. So Maori were more likely to spend greater time in seclusion. So, you know, it says in this report, seclusion should be an uncommon event, used only when there is an imminent risk of danger to the individual or others. But in total, I think there were about 1,000 people who were secluded across all inpatient services. That's including forensic, like the Mason Clinic, intellectual disability and youth services. So it says here 977 people experienced at least one seclusion event. Of those secluded, 70% were male and 30% were female. The most common age group for those secluded, as I have said, was 20 to 24. But, yeah, I think you've got a couple of questions there. Declan, about the age, have you?
Yeah, just wondering. I just wanted to quickly chuck in there first that, you know, I think they really need to look at it. It concerns me when we're going through this that it's almost as if Maori are being prejudiced against or picked on, almost
discriminated against.
Yeah, and the other thing too, I look at with the report on that is, I shouldn't say this, but if they put enough care and attention into looking after people and providing that care as they do in the statistics, rather than sitting and actually giving us those reports and talking about it, that's all well and good. Now we need to actually put that into place.
Yeah.
But yeah, so out of those people that are secluded, or the solitary confinement, as we said, there it comes up. How old are some of those people?
Yeah, well, there is a group over almost 100 people who were aged between birth and 19. It's not the largest group, but, you know, for somebody, a teenager, to be secluded in the way that we have described it, you know, and in an inpatient service, I mean, that's a pretty scary experience in itself. And to have to go into a secluded area where you're alone, there is no support or treatment, there's nothing very much to do. I would say for anyone under the age of 19 or aged between 0 and 19, this would be a fairly scary experience. The other thing, you were going to ask about how long they're secluded.
Yeah, I'd also just wonder as well if we can chuck into there, not only how long are they secluded, are they actually separated into different areas? You know, I mean, there used to be young persons and older persons' mental health. Is that still the same, or are they all basically all in the one unit now?
Well, my experience,
not wanting to put you on the spot,
about 2 years ago was that now that I'm over 65, I have to go into an old people's acute service, and I would say at least half of the people were experiencing dementia there, which doesn't make for the most conducive atmosphere for recovery. In fact, it's quite undermining, because some of those people ask you the same question every time they might pass you in the corridor or pass you when you're sitting outside reading a book, and you know, you kind of don't know whether to say, well, you've asked me that several times before, or whether to just ignore it. But it's not the most conducive environment for...
So did you start to wonder yourself? I'm just being cheeky now.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I was told was that if you don't take your antidepressants, you're more likely to get dementia. Don't take your antidepressants.
Yeah.
This was like a stick to knock me about with, to threaten, really, that if I didn't take my medication, I would be more likely to be at risk of dementia.
This reminds me of that song, "If You Don't Eat Your Meat, How Can You Have Any Pudding?" Remember that one? I can't think.
Well, let's take another music break, Declan. We've got all the way almost to 10 past 1.
Well, I've got an interesting one here. I couldn't actually find the original from this guy. Lee Ryan's his name, and he's I think Blue's split up now, but anyway, he's gone out on his own, and quite a good video with this one. The song's called "Turn Your Car Around." I couldn't actually, as I say, on Spotify, it didn't give me one of him at all, but I've got one that sounds like him anyway. It peaked at number 12 on the UK singles chart, and it reached the top 20 in several other European countries. It actually hit number 2 in Italy. The interesting thing about this was the song was originally written and recorded by a New Zealand musician by the name of Ben Novak in 2004. Here's Lee Ryan with "Turn Your Car Around," and we are Mental Health Radio 104.6 Planet FM, broadcasting every Tuesday 12:30 through to 1:30.
But it's not about them, it's all about us. Can you hear it again and just take it on trust? You still got a way to get out of this one-story town. So you swallow your pride and you're filling the gas, and you're laughing inside about kicking your ass. You gotta stand up, if you don't then you're just falling down. The floor.
tell you it's black, but you know that it's white. See, everything's cool when you don't have to fight. There's nothing outside in the dark there just waiting for you. And I wish it was true. So why don't you turn your car around, forget your way back home, 'cause it's not me there anymore. Turn your car around, you're better off alone. I get myself up off the Tammy sing, well, girl, stand by your manner, like I know you can.
Turn your car around, forget your way back home, 'cause it's not me there anymore. Turn your car around, we're better off at home. I'll get myself above the floor.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I was just going to chuck a little bit in there at the end of that particular track. It's got a really good video. If you find it on YouTube, you'll get the original from Lee Ryan. And it's got him belting through the desert, driving this older style 60s Mustang, I think it is, late 60s, 70s. And this horse galloping along beside him. Unfortunately, he gets a flat tire and comes to a halt. But whenever I see it, it reminds me of the horse ads for the National Bank.
Yeah. So, where would people access that on YouTube?
Yeah, just go into YouTube and type in the name of the track, which is Turn Your Car Around, as in beep beep. And it's by Lee Ryan, L-E-E-R-Y-A-N. And he's one of the better looking members of the Blue Team. Simon Webb also, I've got some music of his I'll play down track, and he's also from the same group. So they all seem to have, you know, gone their own way and done their own thing to a degree.
Yeah, well, Turn Your Car Around, which was the name of that track, as I read coming back on the ferry on my phone this morning, that it looks as though we might have turned around the road toll over Easter. I think probably as few as three or four, as far as I read it, and I think it was double that last Easter. So that's some good news, because we had, I think, either 27 or 29 people killed on the road in 1 week not so long ago.
I think the thing you've got to look at with that, though, is the stats as such are really hinged on how many's in a car, because you could have two crashes and only one person die, and you could have two crashes and you might have a van load of nine people. So it's, I think you've got to look at each incident, don't you, really?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway. Okay, so now I want to know from you, how many DHBs actually use seclusion?
Yeah, well, we are talking about seclusion as part of the report, the annual report of Dr. John Crawshaw, who is the Director of Mental Health and Addictions for the Ministry of Health. There are almost 1,000 people who are secluded in our acute psychiatric or, in fact, across all inpatient services, including forensic, intellectual disability and youth services. And as I highlighted, there's almost 100 people aged between 0 and 19. Many, I would say, would be teenagers who would have spent some time in seclusion. But the fact is that all DHBs, except for Wairarapa DHB, which has no mental health inpatient service, use seclusion. In 2017, the national average number of people secluded in adult inpatient services per 100,000 was about 27.2. I've never quite understood that proportion between 100,000 population and the figure, but it does say that there is variation. And the variation between DHBs is likely to be due to a number of factors, and they include differences in seclusion practice. So I guess the policy that the DHB has towards seclusion, geographical variations in the prevalence and acuity of mental illness. I suppose that means how much serious mental illness there is in a particular geographical area and the prevalence of it. Some ward design factors, it says, such as the availability of intensive care and low stimulus facilities. The staff numbers and experience and training. And one of the other factors is the use of sedating psychotropic medication. So that seems to suggest to me that if you can dope people up with enough medication, psychotropic medication and sedating psychotropic medication, then you may not need to use seclusion. Well, I'm not sure that sedating people with psychotropic medication is a great option or even a preferable alternative to seclusion. And it says the frequent or prolonged seclusion of a small number of people distorting seclusion figures over the 12-month period. Some of the DHBs where they are secluding people above a national average figure are Bay of Plenty, Hawke's Bay, the Mid-Central DHB, Nelson Marlborough, South Canterbury, Northland, Tai Tarafati, which I think is the Gisborne East Coast area, the West Coast of the South Island, and Whanganui. So seclusion still very much alive and well, despite the fact that there is a move to try and achieve zero seclusion by next year, 2020. I know that Declan, in sort of hearing this broadcast and also reading some of the annual report, is very concerned about whether there may be discrimination against Maori. In terms of seclusion and the Maori culture, Maori were 4.5 times more likely to be secluded in adult inpatient services than people from other ethnic groups. Of those secluded in adult inpatient services during 2017, 41%, that's 41%, were Maori. Maori were secluded, going back to that proportion of the population, which is always a bit confusing. But it says here Maori were almost 5 times more likely to be secluded than people from other ethnic groups. So that is a worrying statistic, as are so many health statistics to do with Maori. But again, that seems to be a story that nobody tells in New Zealand, the toll that it takes on the Maori culture and also the toll it takes on the health costs. So, Declan, have you got any other comment there?
Well, I was just having a look at that graph there about the number of people secluded in adult inpatient services per 100,000. And what struck me particularly was country areas and also, like rural smaller towns, that sort of thing seemed to come up. Places like on the West Coast where there's probably quite a bit of isolation, I would imagine. Mm. And I sort of wonder what sort of efforts are being put in there to, are they getting the same resources that the bigger cities are getting? Wow. Because, there's been a lot of talk about suicide prevention and so forth with farmers in rural areas, particularly when they're going through tough economic times. So I think there is a group now somewhere in the North Island that deals with that, but that's also, I think, something that I hope they're going to look at as well.
Yeah, well, that's a hugely positive step, I think, where rural communities, and particularly the farming communities, have been identified as people that are at risk from suicide because of the isolation, because of the economic challenges, and also because some of the prospects for maybe dairying, but farming generally have dropped, and farmers are very much committed to mortgages and debt. So any change in their revenue can change their prospects. So I think, you know, we have interviewed people about rural suicide prevention initiatives, and there's some great work going on in that area. So shall we take another music break?
Why not? I've got one here that I've been incubating since it's just come out of Easter eggs. Been incubating this puppy for a little while. It's a song by Jason Mraz, and the artist mentioned this as one of his favourite songs of all the ones that he had written. And he explained it came very quickly to him, although he did need to schedule a date with the divine in order for it to come through. He also wrote the song with Michael, I think his name's Natler, I think I've written, can't read my own writing, Natter. He's a guitarist in his 60s anyway, and it was based on what he would say, and they'd look at the sun, the fiery furnace, 93 million miles away by the time the heat and light gets to us. It's just about right. So that should obviously give you an idea who it is. It's obviously Jason Mraz, and it's 93 million miles, and you're with Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here on 104.6 Planet FM every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1:30.
You can hold on to, looking deeper through the telescope. You can see that your home's inside of you. Just know.
people get ready, get ready. Cause here it comes, it's a light, a beautiful light. Over the horizon, into our eyes.
And that was Jason Mraz with 93 Million Miles from the Sun. It came from actually the start of that series, 800 Words. It was on
Kiwi,
not so long back.
Kiwi series.
Yeah, the yeah. Aussie family that came over, I think.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant series. And yeah, it just reminds me being on the car ferry going to Waiheke on Friday afternoon, and there was a beautiful, beautiful sunset. Took a couple of photographs just over the sun was heading, setting over Rangitoto as I went from Half Moon Bay. And amazingly, within 2 hours, I was sitting on Waiheke Island, and the moon came up, a full moon. And, you know, it just showed the contrast between the sort of setting of the sun and the rising of the moon, and how little time there is between those two things. And both events were quite spectacular. The moon was a full moon coming up through a, well, an apricot tree that I was looking at, and that made it even more sensational. So, yeah.
I wondered if you'd skived off to Waiheke for Easter, and when you said about the moon coming up, I just had a vision of a nudist colony for some weird reason.
Well, I don't think there's a nudist colony there. There is a nudie beach around the through the rocks from Palm Beach, but didn't get anywhere near that over the weekend.
Cool.
Take it from us, Community Notice Board.
And RI International, that based out in Manukau City, they have a Recovery in Action Day. They're promoting a new venue, the Nathan Homestead, which is a fabulous spot at 70 Hill Road in Manurewa. This is going to be held on Friday the 3rd of May between 10 and 2. For your information, the bus, a bus number 366, leaves from Manukau Station and stops right outside the venue. So this is a free event run by RI International. Tangata Whaiora, family, whānau and supporters are invited. You can meet some of RI's new team members. Come together to meet others, support each other and have some fun. There will be lunch provided, the usual fun activities such as karaoke and some special activities presented by our new and talented peer support team members. So that's the Recovery in Action Day on Friday the 3rd of May between 10 and 2 at this new venue at the Nathan Homestead at 70 Hill Road, Manurewa. And I've got an article here, you know, when I look around at the absolute addiction that people have to their cell phones wherever you're travelling. People are, even when they're with company, they're both onto their phones. And Brazilian researchers have found that smartphone addiction is real, and it is associated with impaired decision making. So it's a controversial concept, this smartphone addiction, not recognised by psychiatry as a formal diagnosis, struggling to say that word, but critics say that a problematic relationship with one's phone is usually a symptom of deeper underlying issues, and that it is inappropriate to apply the language of addiction to technology. So we could give you a little bit more about that, but we're just about running out of time, have we, Declan?
You timed that beautifully.
Beautifully.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll catch you guys all next week. Good weather for ducks.
Yep.
Anything you want to say?
Nothing more. Just hopefully it's going to clear up and be fine again.
Yep, we'll see you all next week.